From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, January is Sanctity of Human Life Month as we look toward the 47th anniversary of the egregious Supreme Court Roe v. Wade decision that has resulted in the deaths of over 60 million Americans. Contrary to what the court suggested 47 years ago, that they would resolve the issue of abortion, abortion is more of an issue today than it was in 1973. Now, trust me when I say, just as abortion was a major issue in the 2016 election cycle, it will be even more so in 2020. In just a moment, I'll talk with Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana about the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act and how the effort to force Congress to vote on the measure is actually moving forward. Also, Congressman Don Bacon of Nebraska will join me to discuss the latest in terms of the reaction to President Trump's decision to authorize the military strike, which took out the Iranian general Soleimani, the head of Iran's elite Quds military force. And speaking of abortion, Planned Parenthood has issued their annual report, which proves that abortion is truly their mission. I'll talk with Connor Simmelsberger, FRC's legislative assistant, about that. And we'll give you an overview of the pro-life accomplishments of the Trump administration. Quite frankly, it's quite impressive. And I'll wrap up the show today with David Clawson, FRC's Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview, who will explain why these pro-life victories matter and why they should matter to you. All of that and more coming up on this edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. And hey, folks, let me remind you, if you're in the Baton Rouge area, coming up this Friday and Saturday, the Stand Courageous Men's Conference. That's this Saturday and Friday and Saturday. I'll talk more about that a little bit later. All right. This month, as our nation turns its attention to the grim 47th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court decision that authorized the murder of 60 million baby boys and girls in the womb, there is reason for hope. I think America is turning away from that. Joining me now is House Republican Whip Steve Scalise, who represents the 1st District of Louisiana, serves on the Energy and Commerce Committee, and has been a driving force behind the effort to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. Steve, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, always great to be back with you. Happy New Year. Hope you had a Merry Christmas.
I did. It was great to be out of the district for a while, but we're back and we're back at work. And you're back at work because you've already garnered more support for the discharge petition, 218 votes necessary or signatures to force the House to vote on the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. Well, you picked up another vote, another signature.
I did, Tony. And of course, I think a lot of people followed during impeachment how Jeff Van Drew, a congressman from New Jersey, former Democrat, said enough is enough and switched parties to Republican. I talked with him over the weekend, and as our newest Republican, talked to him about what we're doing with the discharge petition, and he agreed to sign it, Tony. And so that will bring us one step closer. I think 14 signatures left to bring the Born Alive Act and Wagner's legislation that would protect babies born outside the womb, and it would be critical to get that vote on the House floor. Because I think it wouldn't be 218 votes for it. I think there'd be over 300 votes for it. But Pelosi's standing in the way. And a lot of Democrats that claim to be pro-life are hiding behind her and letting her do the dirty work. But the discharge petition gives us a way to go around Pelosi. And we have one more opportunity, one step closer to getting this done. And everybody should be calling their member of Congress and asking a very simple question. Have you signed the discharge petition on Ann Wagner's Born Alive Act? If the answer is yes, we appreciate what they've done. If the answer is no, you can't claim to be pro-life and not sign this discharge petition to get this bill on the floor, have a true debate, and ultimately a vote on whether or not we should protect innocent lives born outside the womb.
Yeah, I agree with your analysis. Obviously, you're the whip. You count the votes, so you have you probably are best situated to make that call. But I would agree with you. If this gets onto the House floor, it will pass. There's no question about it. You've got all the Republicans already on board. But the Democrats, those that are in districts that are conservative-leaning, certainly pro-life, would be forced to support this because this isn't even about abortion. This is about infanticide. We're talking about babies who were born alive and then denied medical care, or as the president has said, are then executed. I mean, this is the thin line between civility and incivility.
It's that severe, Tony, and you put it in I think very poignant terms, because if you ask people, in fact, most people who are pro-choice, who actually identify as pro-choice, think it's wrong for a baby that's born alive outside the womb. That's not abortion. It's murder. Most people recognize that it's murder, but the law in a number of states allow for that baby to be killed and called abortion. And so that's why the Born Alive Act is so important, to give a federal protection across the board, no matter what state you're in, whether your state already has a law protecting that life outside the womb. But if a law like New York or other states that are trying to move legislation, this would say no. If a baby's born alive, can't be murdered. And this is so important. Ann Wagner's bill, we need to get 15 more, hopefully after tonight, 14 more signatures, and it will come to a vote. And I'm telling you, this is one of those things that people really do get around the country. It transcends the abortion debate, like you said. You can debate that. And hopefully we keep pushing the laws like with what we're doing in Louisiana and other states where they're requiring a hospital admitting privileges, which I know you've covered the amicus brief we're doing on that big Supreme Court decision that's going to be coming up. But in the meantime, this is a no-brainer. Again, even most people who identify as pro-choice say a baby should not be murdered after it's born alive outside the womb. We need a vote.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I probably didn't phrase it right. I mean, this is not a question between civility and incivility. It's barbarism is what we're talking about. We're talking about a barbaric culture that would literally allow born children to die. Let me just talk. You mentioned the amicus brief that over 200 members of Congress have signed on to, which you have led that effort. This actually goes back to the time that you and I were in the state legislature and passed the first Abortion Clinic Regulation Act, which is then I think we're like three iterations beyond that now, where abortionist right. has to have admitting privileges at a hospital in order to be able to do these abortions. And it makes sense. That was a part of the original law that we passed, which I'm going to talk more about tomorrow. Mike Johnson is going to be with me, and he was actually the young attorney that worked with me in crafting that legislation back, I guess it was in 1997. But the point is, this is a very big case coming before the Supreme Court. Explain very quickly to our listeners what this is all about.
Okay, so as you put it, Louisiana and a number of other states passed laws. In the state of Louisiana's case, it's a law that requires that if someone's performing an abortion, they have to have admitting privileges at a hospital. You know, you've seen botched abortions where a woman would die on the table because they don't have the ability to take care of that woman. I mean, it's a health issue too. And the law passed, but it's been challenged in the courts. And so it's gone all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And what's so important about this one, Tony, this is the first abortion case that has come up since Gorsuch and Kavanaugh were placed on the court by President Trump. And so it's going to be significant, number one, in determining whether or not a state can put this kind of requirement in place, which would be critical for Louisiana and every other state that's done it. But also it does address the issue of standing, because under current process and law, an abortionist can actually have standing to represent the woman who's having the abortion. This would question whether or not that abortion doctor would even have that legal authority. And I think that's something that's important as well.
And this could be, depending on how the court rules, as you've pointed out, it's a new court, two justices on the court, first abortion case. This could strike at the heart of current jurisprudence when it comes to the abortion issue, not just Roe v. Wade, but Planned Parenthood versus Casey. This could be a major abortion case.
Oh, it absolutely will be one of the biggest ones we've had in a long time. And like I said, with a newly constituted Supreme Court. And so this will be an opportunity for this new court with these new justices to establish what are the abilities for states to protect life. And I think that's going to be something that a lot of other states are going to be watching to see, you know, how far can you go to protect innocent life? And hopefully the court allows us to go all the way in saying that you can defend innocent life. And life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are inalienable rights, but the first one of those is life.
Steve, two final questions for you, because I know you've got to go. But number one is you're at one of the top leadership positions in the country. In Congress, you're working closely with the president now. You've been pro-life since the day you and I were elected back in 1996, and you've had that consistent record. Why, in your opinion, is it so important that America get this right now, that we turn back from this abortion mindset back to a mindset that all human life is sacred?
Well, Tony, it gets to the heart of who we are as a people. I mean, the United States is one of the greatest, most compassionate nations, in the history of the world. And yet, as long as abortion is legal, it does give a kind of a different side that we're letting this happen. And clearly you and millions of people across the country have stood up in so many different ways. We're going to have the March for Life in a few weeks in D.C. where you see all these young kids and, you worry about the future of the country. And then you go to the March for Life and you see high school aged kids, men and women that are coming together to Washington to stand up for life, not to stand up for abortion and Planned Parenthood, but to actually stand against that and to say we're better than this as a country. And so, and look, Tony, I do think with a lot of young people, one of the reasons you are seeing a pro-life culture emerge among young people, to dismay of the far-left media, is that for many young kids, unlike myself, their first picture of themselves is the picture of them inside their mother's womb.
Right.
Because of technology, where you can now see what you looked like when you were in your mother's womb, not a picture of you as a baby 3 weeks old with a rattler, but actually your first picture of yourself as a young person is probably in your mother's womb. And so that's innocent life there. It does transcend the debate, and I think give us an opportunity to relook at what happened with the Roe v. Wade.
Final question for you, Congressman Steve Scalise, as we go into this Sanctity of Human Life Month, what do our listeners need to be doing as it pertains to the discharge petition and other things happening here in Washington?
Like I said, the most important thing you can do is call your member of Congress, whether they're Republican or Democrat. So many Democrats that are in the House today campaigned, ran for office saying they were going to be pro-life. And look, Tony, you can say, hey, I'll vote for the Born Alive Act. That's not enough right now, because a lot of them voted for Nancy Pelosi to be speaker to prevent them from being able to vote on that bill. And so the only way we can go around it is if they sign the discharge petition. So your listeners can call their member of Congress and say, have you signed the discharge petition on the Born Alive Act? It's a yes or no question. And we can get you the link, by the way, Tony, to all of the members of Congress who've signed on. And so if you signed on, great, thanks. But if you haven't signed on, you should ask them why they haven't and urge them to sign the discharge petition. It's easy to do. Takes 5 minutes. Jeff Van Drew will do it tonight.
All right. Well, we'll actually put that up on our website so people can see it. Steve, thanks so much for joining us, and keep up the great work.
Always great being with you, Tony. Appreciate it. God bless.
Okay, Congressman Steve Scalise. All right, we've got that at TonyPerkins.com. You can check it out and see who has signed the discharge petition. Also, you can help us. Just around the corner, we're going to be delivering, we're very close, 90,000 newborn baby hats to Nancy Pelosi. We're going to be actually working with Congressman Scalise to do that. You can be a part of that. Go to TonyPerkins.com. End birthday abortion campaign. $9 will send a baby hat to Nancy Pelosi. And we're going to deliver them. I'm going to deliver them. Go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, don't go away. Congressman Don Bacon of Nebraska is here next.
Join FRC Live via webcast for the 15th annual Pro-LifeCon Digital Action Summit. On January 24th from FRC's headquarters in Washington, you'll hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, and activists who will share how they've used social media and other digital tools to further the pro-life message. You'll be empowered to better reach your own communities by learning best practices from those who are at the cutting edge of the digital pro-life movement. Tune in Friday, January 24th at 8 a.m. at ProLifeCon.com.
We all need to be lectured sometimes. Family Research Council's new podcast features selected talks by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast podium takes on tough issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Listen with us to the lecture, then stick around afterward as we break down the content. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Ever hear the term toxic masculinity? Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. Masculinity is under attack in our culture. The American Psychological Association released guidelines declaring traditional masculinity ideology as harmful. Brown University, an Ivy League school, offered a course, Unlearning Toxic Masculinity, explaining that rigid definitions of masculinity are toxic to men's health. And a University of Texas class, Masculine UT, treated masculinity as if it were a mental health crisis. Thankfully, the culture does not have the last word on true masculinity. God does. Our Stand Courageous Men's conferences offer biblical solutions to the crisis of manhood. We seek to help men develop character, cultivate habits, build relationships, and make commitments that will move them closer to God's design. Check out StandCourageous.com for an event in your area. That's StandCourageous.com. What other trip to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, president of Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. You'll discover the roots of your faith and learn from experts about the geopolitical landscape of the region. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at FRCblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at FRCblog.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, as has been widely reported, Qasem Soleimani, the head of Iran's elite Quds military force and one of the most powerful figures in the Islamic Republic, killed last Friday in an airstrike in Baghdad, which President Trump authorized. Now, appearing on the Sean Hannity show last night on Fox News, Nikki Haley, the former ambassador to the United Nations, emphasized that this, in fact, was the right call. Here's what she had to say.
Make no mistake, what the president did left the Iranian regime completely flat-footed. They did not see this coming. They thought they could continue to do their multiple strikes. But when it got to the lives of Americans, the president is never going to allow that to happen. It happened with the contractor when they started to threaten our diplomats at the embassy, our military personnel. The president put a stop to it.
A senior Iranian commander threatened at Soleimani's funeral to set ablaze America's supporters in the region. But Iran's foreign minister told CBS News the response would be proportionate and against legitimate targets. At least 56 people were killed in a stampede as thousands turned out to mourn Soleimani in his hometown. Here in Washington, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says Democrats will vote this week on a War Powers Act. Join me now to talk more about that is Congressman Don Bacon, who represents the 2nd District of Nebraska and serves on the Armed Services Committee. Congressman Bacon, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. We had 3 weeks back in the district. I guess it's good to be back here in D.C.
Well, it's good in some sense. It's good to have it's good to be back at a time when we need Congress to stand up and support the president. And certainly there are those like yourself and others who understand what is unfolding in the Middle East are supporting the president's actions.
He was absolutely right to target General Soleimani. That guy, for a decade and a half, commanded the Quds force from Iran, and he basically, under his control, had proxy forces in Iraq, Yemen, Syria, Lebanon. Probably the number one threat to Israel was General Soleimani, as an example. And a study was done in DOD. It showed that 608 Americans were killed in Iraq from 2004 to 2011 from the hand of these Shia militias commanded by General Soleimani. That was 17% of all the casualties that we had. And the president made clear, you attack us and kill an American, we will fight back. Last week, they killed an American with a rocket barrage at one of the bases, and then they tried to storm our embassy. It was all under the auspices of General Soleimani, and we showed Iran that we are true to our word now. We're not going to take punches to the face and show restraint. We're going to fight back. And so I applaud the president's action.
We've seen, as I talked about this yesterday on the program as well, but we've had, you know, for a decade or more, we've been trying to reestablish Iraq. We went in there, shed American blood, got a government in there. We're trying to get people back into their communities, religious minorities. And one of the big obstacles has been the militias. And the militias are being controlled in large part from Iran. And this is the proxy forces that Soleimani and others have been using to basically fight the West. And so our money going to Baghdad, then being distributed to these militias being controlled by Iran. I mean, I hope that in the midst of this, we might actually find a way forward with the elimination of him.
You know, the Iranians exported the explosively formed penetrators, known as EFPs. These are those roadside bombs that could go through our tanks. That was deadly to Americans in, like, particularly 2006, 7, 8, 9 time frame. Very deadly. Trained snipers in Tehran killed many of our soldiers, were Iranian-trained snipers. They had 120-millimeter rockets and higher that were built in Iran and given to the Shia militias. That's what I was hit with for every day for a year, was from the Sadr City Shia militias. Between 3 to 30 rockets a day would hit in the green zone from that guy. And those folks were controlled by General Soleimani. And so it was time that we pushed back. And we warned them. We warned them last month. We've been warning them all the way through. You attack our forces in Iraq, we will fight back. And what better to do the actual person who is in charge? I think it was very appropriate. Now, what really angers me is Speaker Pelosi said it was disproportionate use of firepower. We killed the guy who killed 608 Americans, and she calls it disproportionate. What does she need, another 100 Americans killed? Does she need another 1,000? At what point is it proportionate to take out the guy who's killing Americans? When she called it disproportionate, that should anger every American. It angered me. I know people who got killed by this guy, and frankly, one was enough, let alone 608.
Now, Congressman Bacon, President Trump says his administration may discuss releasing the intelligence that led to the strike on Soleimani. Why do you think he feels the need to do that? And is it
because he's being undermined by the Democratic leadership who are trying to undercut him against the world's export number one exporter of terror, that's Iran, and the Quds Force. You know, the presidential candidates, Speaker Pelosi, my opponents, frankly, back in Nebraska, oppose him every step of the way, and they're reading off the Iranian playbook of how to defend or to counter Trump on this versus Iran. They're weakening us to the world's exporter of terror, the number one exporter. And so I think he feels like he has to show the intelligence. I would recommend him not to. I think he could, in a classified setting, he will share it with Congress tomorrow. But we don't want Iran to know how we know. We don't want Iran to know how we're hearing their communications or tracking them. That makes it less likely in the future that we will know what they're doing. So I would encourage him not to capitulate on this. And yeah, do the classified briefings to Congress, but I wouldn't declassify it. We want to preserve the ability to track Iran.
Yeah, I think it's extremely important. But I think it's also very important to have voices like yours, Congressman, out there supporting the president who have been there in Iraq. You have seen what the Iranians are doing, and you're defending the president's actions, which I think are appropriate. Congressman, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Congressman Bacon of Nebraska. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, don't go away. When we come back, taking a look at Planned Parenthood's new annual report proves that abortion is its mission. I'll talk with Connor Simmelsberger, FRC's legislative assistant. Stay tuned for more Washington Watch right after this.
Last year, my brother Josh, a 37-year-old married father with 5 kids under the age of 9, announced he was becoming a woman. Josh changed his name to Melissa and now requires everyone to use she, her pronouns when referring to him. If the grandparents refuse to do this, they've been threatened with limited access to their grandchildren. My tall, handsome, muscular brother began taking strong female hormones that transformed him into a different person. He began wearing dresses, wigs, heels, and makeup in public. He will have to stay on female hormones until the day he dies. He refuses to answer to the name Josh now. He says Josh is dead. There was even some type of symbolic burial ceremony to say goodbye to Josh, once and for all. You've been listening to an excerpt from a 6-part series telling the true account of a family impacted by the transgender movement. To read this important blog series, visit frc.org/cult.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council and host of Washington Watch. I invite you to join our family and thousands of others across the country in standing on the Word of God as we go into 2020, the global year of the Bible, by joining in a 2-year family chronological Bible reading plan. I can assure you that your family will be powerfully impacted by reading God's Word and growing in the understanding of His truth together. The readings take only 15 to 20 minutes a day, with Sundays set aside for a family or small group discussion. To join us, simply go to TonyPerkins.com and click on Stand on the Word with FRC. That's TonyPerkins.com, or call 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. Let's stand together on the Word of God and change the world, beginning in our own home. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So good to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. As I mentioned at the top of the program, coming up this Friday and Saturday, for those of you men in the Baton Rouge area, Stand Courageous, our men's conference. We're kicking off the first of the 2020 year. We'll be in several states over the next 10 months, the first being in Baton Rouge, my hometown. We'll be at Jefferson Baptist Church Friday night, beginning at 6 p.m., going through Friday night and then Saturday during the day. To find out more how you can be a part of this, General Jerry Boykin will be there. Bishop Larry Jackson of North Carolina will have local pastors. David Goza, who pastors there at Jefferson Baptist. My good friend, Pastor Mark Sturmer, will be there. And then we'll have a number of breakout sessions. And so, wives, encourage your husbands to attend. Fathers, bring your sons and be a part of this. We've done these around the country and other parts. It's over the last few years, kind of sporadically, very powerful, impactful. Come and be a part of it. Find out how. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Stand Courageous. All right, Planned Parenthood has just released its annual report for the 2018-2019 fiscal year. And the numbers really don't come as much of a surprise. In 2018, Planned Parenthood facilities performed, all right, listen to this, 345,672 abortions, an increase of more than 13,000 abortions from what the group reported the previous fiscal year. That's also the highest number of abortions that the group has ever performed in a single year since it began reporting its abortion data. Joining me now with further analysis of this is Connor Simmelsberger. He's FRC's legislative assistant. Connor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's great to be on, Tony.
Connor, amazingly, this statistic reveals that as the abortion rate, according to the CDC, has actually declined, in fact, steadily declined, almost half of what it was in 1980. Planned Parenthood's share of the annual abortions in this nation has continued to increase. To what do you attribute that to?
I think that's the question we should all be asking is, how can the numbers decrease but Planned Parenthood's share of abortions continue to go up? And what I it really points back to is it's their mission. Their mission, as we all have known for so many years and is so clear now, is to promote and to perform abortions across the U.S. and actually across the globe. So they've taken actions to continue to push abortions in rural areas and in urban areas where they can, you know, very much go after targeted populations. And that has been their goal, to continue to increase their supply, the supply of abortions across the U.S. And we've seen that as clear as day in the numbers they just reported from last year.
I mean, they don't like this. They deny it publicly, but abortions are us is what Planned Parenthood is. They say that just 3% of their services are abortion related. Well, how that just doesn't add up. I mean, if you look at the numbers, let's take, for instance, adoption referrals. 35 abortions for every 81 abortions for every adoption referral. I mean, the abortions that they do so far outpaces anything else that they do. How do they get away with saying that abortion is just a small part of what they do?
Yeah, and that's a question that we were able to actually dig into and figure out a while back. And even I think some other, you know, media outlets have reported how this statistic is so misleading, giving, the Washington Post giving them Pinocchios for that 3% number. And they're so crafty in how they do this. And what they do is they'll count all their services together in a large number. This year it came out to be 9.8 million total services. And then they take that 345,000 abortions, as you said earlier, and they find that that's actually only 3% of their total services. But the catch is that one woman that might go in for and ultimately get an abortion, but they'll also give her a pregnancy test and different other STD tests, other tests, and they count that as 4, 5, 6, 7 different services, really, when they only treated one woman. So they're able to conflate these numbers up so high to act like they're doing so many additional services, when really the 6, 7, 8 services could be given to one woman who ultimately then they give an abortion in the end. And so they're able to hide behind this 3% number that even, like I said, the Washington Post saw right through and saw that this is a really misleading number.
Now you know, abortion is seen as a political issue, a cultural issue, but it's also big business. It's a moneymaker for Planned Parenthood. How much does the average abortion cost in the first trimester?
Yeah, and that's a tricky question in the first trimester, because what they do is increasingly they've been pushing chemical abortions using this abortion pill method, which is dramatically cheaper for them. And that type of abortion method is only available in the first 10 weeks, that first trimester. So surgical abortions, what we've seen for so many decades and has happened for so long, those numbers are actually declining. A lot of those chemical abortions are increasing. And Planned Parenthood loves that because their costs can go down. They don't have to employ abortionists to actually do the abortions, which is the big high cost for them. So it really varies whether you're getting a surgical or a chemical abortion. But again, they're trying to lower their costs and increase revenue by, again, more abortion. They have more money coming in and cheaper costs. That's a win-win for Planned Parenthood.
So it's basically a higher profit margin on the chemical abortions for Planned Parenthood.
Yep, that's correct.
All right, Connor, stick around because I got another question for you on this on the other side of the break. And then also, I want to quickly hit some of the pro-life achievements of this administration. This has been a big focus of the Trump administration. We're going to talk about that next, folks, when we return, and why it matters or why it should matter to you. That's coming up next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at FRCblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at FRCblog.com.
A strong case can now be made that China has become one of the most totalitarian states in human history. The Chinese Communist Party restricts religious practice and oppresses religious minorities on a sweeping scale, targeting those of every faith, especially Christians, Muslims, Tibetan Buddhists, and Falun Gong. The Chinese Communist Party's movement against religion has had and continues to have devastating consequences for those who simply wish to live according to their conscience. The Chinese Communist Party's consistent abuses of human rights prove that it cannot be treated just like any other country. The United States must address these human rights and religious freedom violations in their trade and diplomatic dealings with China. For more information about the human rights crisis in China, visit frc.org/China. That's frc.org/China.
In the U.S., the rate of chemical abortions is at an all-time high. This increase is being driven by the abortion industry, which wants abortion pills available through the pharmacy in the mail, making do-it-yourself abortions the future of the abortion industry. Abortion advocates once claimed that legal abortion would prevent back-alley abortions, but the health complications that often result from chemical abortion are eerily similar to those of back-alley abortions. For more information, visit frc.org/chemical-abortion.
Last year, my brother Josh, a 37-year-old married father with 5 kids under the age of 9, announced he was becoming a woman. Josh changed his name to Melissa and now requires everyone to use she, her pronouns when referring to him. If the grandparents refuse to do this, they've been threatened with limited access to their grandchildren. My tall, handsome, muscular brother began taking strong female hormones that transformed him into a different person. He began wearing dresses, wigs, heels, and makeup in public. He will have to stay on female hormones until the day he dies. He refuses to answer to the name Josh now. He says Josh is dead. There was even some type of symbolic burial ceremony to say goodbye to Josh, once and for all. You've been listening to an excerpt from a 6-part series telling the true account of a family impacted by the transgender movement. To read this important blog series, visit frc.org/cult.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host, and I am happy you're here. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All kinds of resources there today at TonyPerkins.com. There's information talked about earlier with Steve Scalise on who signed the discharge petition. It's at TonyPerkins.com. Information about Stand Courageous. It's at TonyPerkins.com. Also, what I'm about to talk about here in just a moment is also at TonyPerkins.com. That's the pro-life accomplishments of the Trump administration. But before I get to that, Connor Simmelsberger, FRC's legislative assistant, is with me. Connor, after you know, combing through Planned Parenthood's annual report, and I know we've talked about some of the highlights, anything in particular that stuck out to you that just kind of, wow, that's interesting?
Yeah, quite a few things, but the one that was really striking was, boy, that Planned Parenthood sees the pro-life victories we're making, and I think that was a good thing to come from this, was that they knew they couldn't stop Brett Kavanaugh. They've seen the courts continue to rule in favor of pro-life laws. They've seen the administration, the presidential administration, for the first time telling them no in the Protect Life rule, saying they have to separate their practices from abortion. And they know it. And so they are fighting tooth and nail. It was clear all throughout the report that they are fighting. They're fierce. They're going to defend. They're going to beat back these pro-life laws. And I think it goes to show what victories the pro-life movement has made. And they're changing their tactics. They are, again, doing what they can to promote chemical abortion so that even if a state restricts abortion, they can send those chemical pills in. That's their ultimate goal. And they're really targeting the youth, teens, young people talking about sexual health and comprehensive sex ed, but even moving into the LGBT space, as you know, we fight these issues all the time. They're continuing to push that agenda as early as preschool. I saw in the report a highlight of a video for parents on how to talk to their preschool kids about gender identity. And so just the shocking sweep of their agenda, how quickly it's shifting to this broader liberal progressive social agenda. It's very political, and it's all as a response, as I would attribute it, to the great pro-life gains we've seen in 2019.
Connor, before we go to those pro-life gains that you made reference to, I just want people to be clear, our listeners to understand, now many probably do, but when you talk about chemical abortions, that doesn't necessarily require that the young mother would go into the clinic and see a doctor? I mean, we've got states pushing this telemed abortions where you just, you know, you talk to them on the phone or video phone and it dispenses drugs to you. And that's a part of where they're going with an app, where the app can be the source that people would get this information or even these drugs without having full medical evaluations and advice.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It was clear as day they're pushing this. It's called Planned Parenthood Direct. It's an app that right now you can only get contraceptive services through it, but it is so geared, and you can see it right in how it's designed, that the moment they can continue to push to lower these federal regulations on how chemical abortions are distributed, they're going to go full scale just distributing that app through the mail. They published a study just this year trying to show the safety of it, just sending these abortion pills through the mail without any, you know, checkups with the woman, any checks for ectopic pregnancies, especially young women that would want to, you know, maybe usurp, go around their parents or not be seen getting an abortion. They would go directly through this app to get these pills. It's a dangerous world they're trying to push, and luckily we see this and we're pushing back against it, but it's coming quick, and we see that end game. They've moved to now 16 states where you can get a telemed abortion in. That was an increase of 3 states from last year, and so each year they're going to continue to push this through this app so that even if Roe v. Wade's overturned and states can implement heavy restrictions on abortions, this is their goal, to usurp those laws and push these pills everywhere they can.
Well, Connor, you talked about there, a lot of this is in response to the pro-life gains that have been made in recent years, not only at the national level, but the state level. For the last 10 years, we've seen a pro-life march across the country. But under the Trump administration, we've seen significant pro-life gains beginning almost from day one. Within 72 hours of the president taking office, he reinstated and expanded the Mexico City policy, which is a policy that dates back to Ronald Reagan, named after Mexico City, where it was announced, essentially saying no federal funds will be spent in our foreign policy to promote or to do abortions. And that was just the start. Give our listeners some of the other highlights of what has happened over the last 3 years under this administration.
It has been such a great 3 years of pro-life gains with this administration, even beyond what we could have imagined when he was elected in 2016. You hit the nail on the head. First, you know, week in office, he expands the Mexico City policy. Ever since, it's continued to crack down. Secretary Pompeo closing loopholes in international funds that go to abortion providers, even trying to, you know, ensure that domestic groups aren't sending that get these funds aren't promoting abortion abroad. So that was a key victory. I alluded to this earlier, too, the Protect Life rule, which says in the Title X family planning program that Planned Parenthood participated in, that they could no longer be financially or physically located in the same place where abortions were provided. It's something we've been waiting a long time for since the Clinton days of 1992, when the latest regulations were in place. And it was great because instead of providing women's health care, family planning funds, Planned Parenthood said, we'd rather continue to promote abortion and put women's health in jeopardy. We need to continue to promote and refer for abortions. And so they opted out and lost upwards of $50 million, another great win. On top of that, there's been a great push for conscious protections. We've had a long time standing conscious protections laws on the books. However, there's been varying enforcement of that. Obama really restricting how those laws were enforced. But the Office of Civil Rights at our Department of Health and Human Services has been stellar ever since the Trump administration has come in. They've even investigated into a situation where a nurse in Vermont who was coerced to participate in an abortion, and they found the story. They went and investigated the University of Vermont to see what went on. So from top to bottom, they have made great pro-life gains and continue to push these new regulations through. Unfortunately, the opposing side continues to sue against things like the Protect Life rule held up in the courts, an expanded conscious protection rule held up in the courts. But what's great is the Trump administration has totally delivered on the other aspect of that, which is the judicial nominees. Two new Supreme Court nominees, Justice Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, which were great victories, but also the circuit courts and the district courts. And we're seeing that this produced dividends. When the Protect Life rule was held up in the Ninth Circuit, again, the Ninth Circuit being such a liberal circuit out there, because of Trump nominees out there that actually ruled in favor of the administration and temporarily allowed this rule to go into effect, which is what we're working under now. So from judicial nominees to foreign affairs to domestically, Trump has delivered, and even more so on all the pro-life policies we could ever want.
And folks, you can actually see that for yourself. It's one of the resources today at the website, TonyPerkins.com, under episode resources. We've got the entire list. Connor and the whole team there in our policy shop putting together this comprehensive list of all that the president, his administration, has done on the life issue. And as Connor said, it's more than impressive. It's unprecedented. Connor, thanks so much for joining us, and appreciate the great work you do.
Thank you very much, Tony.
All right. Connor Simmelsberger with our policy and GA shop here at FRC. All right. We're going to transition here. I'm going to bring in David Clawson, who is FRC's director of our Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview. David, you heard Connor kind of go through the list of all the pro-life accomplishments. And, you know, some, there might not be many, but there might be some skeptics out there, somebody who just happened to be listening to the program and saying, oh, that's just a Republican political issue. No, the issue of the sanctity of human life and the policies that we as a nation embrace is much more than a political issue. This is quite a significant issue that Christians should be concerned about. Why?
Absolutely, Tony. And this issue matters because human life is at stake. And this president gets it. I'll never forget last year at the State of the Union, in front of all those lawmakers and distinguished guests, Trump looked out at the crowd and said, let us affirm a fundamental truth. All children, born and unborn, are made in the holy image of God. I remember sitting there and just almost having my breath taken away, hearing the President of the United States with a bold theological claim affirming the personhood of the unborn. And now, within 3 years, we've seen it's not just rhetoric. There is bold action behind that rhetoric. And that's something that all Christians should be profoundly grateful for.
Yeah, I find it quite puzzling, I should say, that there are those who for years, and I, quite frankly, I entered into the political arena because of the abortion issue. It was, I just thought all Christians were pro-life, and then I saw this massive conflict over that issue in 1992 when Operation Rescue came to Baton Rouge, and I was a police officer, and that's another story for another day. But all these Christians who have been, you know, praying for an end to abortion, you know, we've had these, you know, these calls to repent for abortion. And it struck me as I watched this administration and what they were doing that, is this not repentance? Mm. I mean, repentance is not just going down and, you know, at the altar and weeping, and that's a part of it, certainly. But it is, you know, in the Greek, in the New Testament, it means change, metanoia, change your mind, change your direction. That's what policy is. It's changing the direction. What we're witnessing here could be the decades of the prayer that have been lifted up from believers mourning the abortions that have taken place in this country, and we have an administration that is actually embracing policies that is the reflection of repentance, but yet then we see Christians saying, oh, no, we can't have him do it because he's not the right guy. Who would be the right guy? I mean, it's happening.
You're absolutely right. And when you and Connor were having a conversation just moments ago, the thought that I had is that what we are seeing in the last 3 years is the answer to prayers that faithful Christians have been praying since 1973, that eventually, ultimately, Roe v. Wade would be overturned. And this administration is doing everything they can to enact pro-life wins. There are more babies alive today because President Trump is in office than had he lost the 2016 election. And that is significant. And so you're absolutely right. Is this president perfect? By no means. Nobody is. But we should be judging someone and their accomplishments based on the fruit that we see. And again, I am profoundly grateful seeing what we've seen these last 3 years. And like you said, Tony, that is an answer to the prayers of faithful Christians for the last 40 years.
I mean, there's certainly more, and we've talked about more. We talk about religious freedom. We talk about these other issues here. But this, I think this is one of the most significant issues for a nation, that if you do not respect the sanctity of human life, because as Scripture teaches, you know, as we've talked about here in the program, Jeremiah 1:5, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. I mean, you've talked about that in terms of response to some of the Democratic candidates, that this is a human life created in the image of God. Yes. And that's what gives it its value. That's what gives humans their values. They're created in the image of God, and therefore they should be welcomed into the world and protected under our laws, regardless of what zip code they may have been conceived in or what side of the tracks they were born on. That does not matter. What matters is they are created in the image of God. And a nation that denies that pays a steep price. And we've been paying that price now for nearly five decades.
You're absolutely right. I think the latest statistic I saw since 1973, I think it's 60 million babies have been aborted. 60 million. My mind can't even wrap my mind around that number. And you know, for Christians, people sometimes accuse people like you, people like me, of being one-issue voters. Well, we care about a lot of issues, but the issue of life, whether it's permissible to extinguish the life of an unborn child, there's a term that theologians use called, you know, theological triage. Well, the number one issue, an issue where there's a clear, thus saith the Lord, where the Bible speaks clearly, is the issue of life.
Well, we also know from a political standpoint that if you get this issue right,
yes,
most of the other issues fall in line, because there's a recognition of the creative nature of God, and that we are created by Him, and therefore being created by Him, we're under His authority.
Absolutely. And as Christians, we need to understand that. And it's really we had a conversation about this yesterday, the difference between exegesis and eisegesis. Exegesis meaning reading the passage to find out what that Scripture teaches. And the Bible is clear from cover to cover that human beings are made in the image of God, and that personhood is found in the unborn child. And that's what I write about actually in one of my latest publications in our Biblical Worldview series. And I survey that the Bible teaches from cover to cover that all people are made in God's image, including the unborn child.
And that's another resource for you at TonyPerkins.com. Check it out. Go to TonyPerkins.com. David, as always, great to have you on the program, and appreciate all the work that you're doing in our Christian Ethics and Worldview section.
Thank you so much, Tony.
And be sure and check that out, folks. Go to TonyPerkins.com, and you can follow the links over to all of today's resources. And again, let me remind you two action steps here. In birthday abortions, you can find that at TonyPerkins.com. And if you're in the Baton Rouge area, stand courageous this Friday and Saturday. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do and you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.